Hello there.
Hello there.
And welcome to This Is Awful, a podcast. I'm Allison. I'm a true crime buff.
And I'm Trevor, her chubby hubby and co-conspirator.
And three times a month, Trevor and I like to info dump about a specific case or true crime topic. And then we like to info dump smarter and not harder, we do it in our office and record it. And then we can just info dump
for everyone.
Everybody.
Yeah, it's like having real friends, but we don't.
World. Yeah, right?
This must be what adults do when they go out to bars with each other, but we don't do any of that. So we'll do it here.
So normally we do our business at the top of the show. We don't have any business at the top of the show this episode because I just businessed all over the place last episode.
I mean, this sounds very euphemistic. And I
gross. No, I mean, like, I got through all of it last week. Normally we would have an off week, but I owed you guys an episode. So, I'm just going to jump into it.
Yeah.
Okay.
Let's do it. Yeah. Okay.
So for our traditional blanket trigger warning, we are a true crime podcast, so that means every episode we discuss elements of crime. Episodes may include discussions of violence, death, assault, abuse, oppression, addiction, and other potential triggers. If we are ever going to discuss something in detail, or if it's something that's unusually upsetting, we do try to add another trigger warning before that. We do also believe in the power of profanity, so swears ahead.
Yeah. Fuck yeah.
Fuck yeah. Make sure we get one in there. This is a sweary episode. Yep, it is. So I'm going to do sources.
Okay.
KREM.com, KHQ.com, Inlander.com, Out.com, Spokesman.com, NBCRightNow.com, KXLY.com, and there's a Facebook page that I will reference as I'm going through this, but it's run by the family of the victim, so,
yeah. Yeah. Okay.
That's where I got all my stuffs from.
Typically, I guess where that is. And I don't know. Based on all that, it sounds like these are all news stations that are west of the Mississippi.
Yes, it's the Pacific Northwest.
Okay. And that our victim may be LGBT.
Yes.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. I don't even really know how to preface this. It's a pretty heavy one. This is a case that I first became aware of when it was still a missing persons case.
Yeah.
I have some friends in the Pacific Northwest and I see stuff that they share. And one of them in the fall of 2020 shared a post about a young man who had been missing in Newport, Washington. I think it had only been a couple weeks when I first had seen it. Because it was shared really widely through those, like, that community.
Yeah.
And this young man's name was Jason Michael Fox. Jason was 19 years old. He was an artistic person who loved theater. There's, like, dozens of pictures of him with this cute little mini pincher dog. Mm-hmm. And then, like, a kitty. Like, he's an animal lover. Like, he just seems like somebody who is very warm and welcoming. And, he was very close with his family. He loved them deeply. He had an older brother named Robbie. He was 1 year older.
Oh, like Irish twins.
Yes. Like super close in age.
Me and my older brother.
So you know their dynamic.
Yeah.
Yeah. He also had a younger sister, and his parents had divorced when the boys were just little. So he had three parents, Michael and Susan, and that's who he mostly lived with, and Pepper.
Okay.
Growing up, he lived with Michael and Susan in Newport. I guess Michael and Susan got married when he was, like, about 7.
Okay.
And it sounds like Newport's not atypical of most rural communities all over the U.S.
Yeah.
It's a small town. Census last year said 2,126 people.
Okay.
So, very small.
Yeah.
It's right on the Idaho-Washington border.
Okay.
And it's surrounded by national forest.
Yeah.
So it's pretty isolated.
Okay.
It's small enough to be the kind of town where everybody's business is everybody's business.
Yeah.
There's only 2,000 people. I think where we live is pretty small. And I think that's like the high school.
Yeah.
That's
the, our that's high school serves town. Our entire county and not well, just yeah, the
but
city. I'm.
It's just interesting to be like, oh, that yep, Biddy, yeah. Biddy Town.
Yeah,
but it does seem like Jason was also aware of some really harmful attitudes toward the LGBTQI community in that community.
Yeah.
He tried a little bit of everything to try and like find his place, find where he fit in. Mm-hmm. He did musical theater and wrestling. He was in football when he was in middle school. He volunteered at the long-term care facility. He took care of residents there.
Oh, that's nice.
Just a good guy. Yeah. Yeah. In school, he made a lot of friends because he was an engaging and dynamic person, but he wasn't one of the popular kids.
Yeah.
I guess it was the stereotypical, you know, the jocks are the popular kids.
Yeah.
And he wasn't really that into sports. Mm-hmm. And so he was well liked, but he definitely still got.
He's kind of on the out.
A target. Side. Yeah. People felt comfortable around him easily, but also there's always going to be that small handful of people who feel like they have to create their own power by trying to take away somebody else's.
Yep.
And so Jason definitely got into some fights growing up. I don't know that I want to call it getting into fights as much as it is just fighting back, though, because he was frequently the target of attacks.
Yeah.
Of like, it kind of like he'd go into a situation and they would expect him to just accept being jumped.
Yeah.
And he would like throw punches back.
Yeah.
And so then it was a fight.
That's often the dynamic. Inside fights is like one person absolutely like started the fight.
Mm-hmm.
And the other person, just because they were unwilling to accept just being.
Yeah. And they're not just gonna like lay down. Yeah.
Then it becomes, oh, it's a fight. And both parties get like equal blame in the matter. Whereas like it's a really harmful.
Yeah, it's something where it's
that
like,
we always perpetuate. Like, it's actually a huge thing inside schools.
With bullying, yeah.
With zero the tolerance bully policies gets where.
In trouble, too.
Yeah, if a kid stands up for themselves against constant bullying, they will get in as much trouble or more trouble than whoever was bullying them because of zero tolerance policies.
Mm-hmm. But he also, like, he didn't come home and, like, have a bunch of bruises and. You know, cry about it. He was just like scrappy.
Yeah.
He was just pissed about it. You know what I mean? Yeah,
he's like just not gonna take it.
He wasn't going to take it. Take yeah.
It. Yeah.
But it really seemed to bother his childhood bullies that he wasn't going to just accept it.
Yeah.
And another one of those common problems of small rural communities is that you tend to get a pretty stagnant population.
Yeah.
And so a lot of the same people who were childhood bullies just turn into grown up bullies.
Yeah.
Jason came out to his family as gay when he was 18, but it wasn't really an event or a surprise to anyone because, I mean, one, it made no difference to them. They knew he's the same kid as he was before. And two, they all kind of knew. So yeah. They were like, yep, okay, bud.
Yeah.
But in town, he came out as bi because he felt like that would be more accepted in their community.
Yeah.
Going into his senior year, Jason decided that he was going to move to his mom Pepper's house in Seattle. Part of this is because he and Pepper actually hadn't had a lot of time consistently together. She'd had to move, and like that's a whole state apart. That's difficult.
Yeah.
And so it was he wanted to reconnect with her and to foster that.
Yeah.
But also part of it was self-preservation because. There's a lot less stigma to being gay in Seattle than there is to being gay in rural Washington.
I think that anyone can kind of see how that dynamic would play out for a kid who, you know, longs to be kind of out of the small town community and be able to create that new life. I mean, every kid kind of goes through that, I think, when you're leaving high school of like, I want to go somewhere where I can.
Fresh start.
Yeah, fresh start. Create, you know, it's not kids who are remembering, you know, that you peed your pants as a kindergartner or something, but it's new people that only know you as who you're kind of, you know, growing into at that moment.
Mm-hmm.
And especially, you know, if he hasn't been around his mom, going and being with his mom can be, you know, like healing and growing kind of moments.
Yeah.
So.
And he did thrive socially when he lived in Seattle. He seemed to get a lot more comfortable in his own skin. And he made a lot of friends his own age. He was invited out to parties and, you know, to go out and do stuff a lot.
Yeah.
He and Pepper were able to reconnect and build a relationship. And he did, unfortunately, experience the classic senior slump.
Yeah.
So he didn't end up completing all of his required credits.
Mm-hmm.
And so he didn't graduate like on time with his class. He had to like do a couple of credits.
Do remedial packets or whatever. And yeah.
And he was starting to like, he missed his family in Newport and he missed his friends in Newport. So he decided that to finish high school, he was going to go back to Newport and finish it at the remedial school.
Yeah.
So unfortunately, again, another aspect of isolated rural life is that there's a lot of drug addiction in these communities.
Yeah.
Meth is still a huge problem in rural America, and Jason had grown up surrounded by people caught in addiction. That's, you can't avoid it in a small town.
Yeah.
So coming back to Newport for Jason also was returning to that culture. And at some point, Jason admitted to his dad that he had used.
Hmm.
The house rules for the Foxes are pretty hardline, no drug use. And so Jason was kicked out.
That, oh, that's hard. I often feel like because we wrap drug use with morality, with kids, in a way that as they are kind of reaching adulthood and have a little bit more freedom, and they realize that a lot of the other rules that were also wrapped with morality don't actually hold up for adults. You're allowed to make certain decisions for yourself. It creates a bad dichotomy where then all rules kind of have that. And so you have a lot of people that, as they're kind of reaching adulthood, end up experimenting a lot more with hard drugs than they otherwise would have. Because once all the rules go out the window, because now you're 18 and you can kind of make your own decisions, everything seems flexible in a way that.
But also it
shouldn't.
It's not even, and it's not like your brain, like you wake up on your 18th birthday and your brain's like, oh, wow,
I can make these smart decisions. I am now.
So well balanced and reasoned now. It's not how it works.
That's why
you are a kid at 18.
Setting rules within, like for children with logic.
Mm-hmm.
Makes it so that as they get like to adulthood, they understand why they were restricted in certain things and makes certain behaviors less appealing. But I also,
a lot of this is like the parenting rules of, I mean, it's my parents' generation, like, but it's that kind of era of like, oh, in order to change a behavior I don't like, I'm going to withhold.
Yeah.
And it's, I don't think anybody knew any better until fairly recently, and especially in rural communities. I think it's slow to change. I do know his parents loved him very, very much.
Oh, I don't.
I know his parents.
I don't blame his parents on making that decision, because oftentimes parenting doesn't come with instruction manuals, and most parenting books are absolute garbage that are not really great at teaching.
There are some that's actually based in psychology and understanding the development of human brains, but a lot of it's just bunk.
Well, and with parenting, a lot of it really needs to focus on being a good human being as being a parent, because like you have to work on yourself first. I think the tools that are in the toolkit for most parents, especially like now it's getting a little more common, but for most parents there is like, these are our hard lines and we have to kick a kid out because they broke those rules. And that is typical in American households. That is the tool they have to be able to combat stuff like that. Because the other option is, well, you know, maybe they need to go to a treatment facility, but that costs six figures a year and we can't afford that. So those are your only two.
Or they get in trouble with the law and they get sent to somewhere that's not as supportive of healing and is rather just incarceration.
So, but it's also just a tough thing to see, because I know so many kids, especially queer kids, that upon coming out as adults have then a really hard time transitioning into like a healthy adulthood without spending a lot of time experimenting with everything.
Yeah, and because, he did go through that phase. He went through that.
Yeah, because you're finally allowed to like live your own truth.
Well,
and you kind of have to test all those boundaries because everything was set up in this way.
And I think that for him, he wasn't able to confidently live as who he was in his little hometown. And he kind of was able to feel that a little bit when he lived in Seattle. And when he was able to come back to Newport, he brought some of that with him. He still kind of diminished aspects of himself in order to fit in. But yeah, he definitely, I think he came back and used socially because that's what was happening to the other people his age who were still living still in town. And because he wanted to be part of, you know, it's there's safety in being accepted. And so being, I can just see how it, how he was funneled to that. And that's, it's tough because I think a lot of drug use gets dismissed as, like you said, a moral failure when really it's a, I mean, we set things up this way.
Yeah.
That's why it's a trend.
We need to all accept it as it's a societal failure in not giving people the correct tools to be able to navigate this world.
That summer, in which was 2020,
Jason
mostly couch surfed. He stayed with various friends, but he didn't want to go back to Seattle to live with Pepper. She did offer, but he said that he didn't feel like he like had his people there, you know?
Yeah.
Which is, I understand that feeling of like, you still want the connection of your hometown, but you also want the freedom of a fresh start. And it's, that's a,
well, a fresh start.
A lot of people go back and forth.
Yeah. A fresh start's really, really nice. But at the same time, you
get homesick.
You don't have the same kind of connection. You can have a lot of friendly faces around you, but that doesn't mean you have the same connection with people. I mean, this sounds like many, many, many people I knew.
Yeah.
At that time in my life.
And a trigger warning here for sexual assault. Partway through the summer, Jason called Pepper to seek support. He told her that his couch surfing had brought him in contact with a man that had raped him. She begged him to move in with her, and he still was like, no, I don't want to go back to Seattle. I want to stay here. I want to, you know, I'm part of the plan was for him to go to community college.
Yeah.
That fall. But he did agree to file a police report. She, you know, said, go to the police, please at least do that. And he said, yeah, I will. There is no police report of the incident. So he didn't end up going to police. Jason's dad, Michael, knew that there was probably drug use going on as Jason was couch surfing. But he wasn't aware of the rest of the dynamics in Jason's life.
Yeah.
He had hoped that some real life, like, you know, hitting rock bottom kind of would encourage Jason to look for the next step up. And Susan was just worried. She was just worried for Jason.
Yeah.
In August, Jason's family encouraged him to go visit Robbie, who was living in Pullman, and to stay with him for a while. They wanted him to stay there until he could start at the community college that fall. Robbie was really excited for his little brother to come and visit. He got a whole bedroom set up for him. He like went out and bought him a bed and bought him a TV and everything so that he would have like his own space. Yeah. And like most siblings, they had butted heads as younger teens.
Yep.
But Robbie describes that the last time he saw his brother, it felt like the relationship was the best it had ever been. And most of all, even though Robbie joked that Jason stole all his friends, he was just happy to see Jason feel comfortable with who he was.
Yeah.
It seemed like Jason was fitting in and it was without drug use and without hiding, you know, elements of who he was. He was just being Jason. After a week-long visit, Jason told Robbie that he felt like he was intruding. And so Jason planned to go home for a couple of weeks and then come back to Pullman the next month.
Okay.
September was the next month. On September 14th, 3 days before Jason was going to return to living with Robbie in Pullman, Jason was invited to hang out with a group of friends at Timber River Ranch, which, so it's not too far out of town. It's like 15 minutes out of town. but also town is very relative. So remember. So it went, it goes from remote to very remote pretty quick. You do have to go on like a gravel road and like through, you know, go open the gate and stuff.
Yeah.
But it's a venue barn. And it's a little bit tucked back off the road. And usually it's where there's like weddings and, you know, events. But at this particular time, I guess it was like subject to, like the owners were in the middle of a divorce as well as it was middle, like peak COVID.
Yeah.
So it was pretty quiet. And it's definitely remote.
Yeah.
Jason's text messages with Claude Merritt that day show that Claude asked Jason to come and get him so that they could both ride out together to hang out at the ranch. They also show that Jason felt like something was a little off. He specifically asked, he said, okay, well, what's your address, like coming to pick him up? And then he clarified that someone named Riley Hillstad would not be at the ranch when they got there. He was really concerned about Hillstad, who he knew had been living at the ranch property. He said that he didn't, like, he's like, I want to come hang out, but I don't want any drama. And Merritt answered, bro, that's why I'm at where I'm at, because I don't like that shit around me. Jason agreed to come, but it seems like he was still at least a little uneasy because he sent his cousin this text. 22 Jurgens Road, in case anything happens to me. Jason did not come home that night. He did not come home at all. A missing persons report was filed immediately. Emergency ping on Jason's cell phone showed that he was on the property at 22 Jurgens Road, exactly where he said he would be.
Yeah.
On September 16th, so that's 2 days after he went missing, officers went out to the address to check if Jason was there. I guess there's a like a caretaker's house over by like the river area away from the venue part.
Yeah.
When they knocked on the door, they made contact with Matthew Raddatz Freeman, Claude Merritt, Riley Hillstad, and a woman who also lived at the property. I'm not adding names of anybody who hasn't been formally charged in anything.
Okay.
Because this is a very recent case and there is still a chance they could be charged with something.
Yeah.
So
no, I think that's
just not going to mess anything up. Yeah. Not like I think we have all that much clout, but you know, just in case.
No, that's smart.
All four people gave different stories of when they had last seen Jason, ranging from a couple of weeks to a couple of months. Riley Hillstad said that it had been at least a month. Matthew Raddatz Freeman said specifically that Jason knows better than to come to this property, which, and that he hadn't been there in at least a couple of months. But his girlfriend said that Jason had been there the week before and that he'd been kicked off of the property, like that they escorted him off the property.
Huh.
Oh, and then Mr. I don't like that shit around me, Claude Merritt, said that he hadn't seen Jason in 2 weeks.
Yeah, he invited him out there.
Mm-hmm. Meanwhile, as soon as Pepper had heard that her son was missing, she paid a few months on her apartment, like in advance, and moved into a hotel room in Newport to help search. She and Michael were, and Susan, like, it's, his family was very involved from the very beginning.
Yeah. Seems, yeah.
It seems like a lot of people were involved from the very beginning because the whole community kind of talked.
Yeah.
Jason's family was hearing whispers of different names, and while they were hoping to bring their son home alive, the whispers were not good. There were rumors that Jason had been killed on the property that night and that he was buried there.
Hmm.
Which is not a good thing to hear from your community, like your rumor mill.
No, that's...
that's horrifying.
Yeah.
Police slowly continued to make contact with people that were rumored to have been there that night. On September 20th, they interviewed Kevin Belding, who said that he had not seen Jason in 2 or 3 weeks, but he thought that Jason had been headed to Montana. On September 22nd, Jason's car was found outside of Libby, Montana. Hmm. No sign of Jason, no sign of struggle, no activity on Jason's phone or accounts. But do you know whose phone did have activity in Libby, Montana in that time frame?
Oh, let me guess. That guy.
Raditz Freeman's cell phone had pinged off of Libby's cell towers on September 15th.
Day before police came to talk to him.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Hillstatt and Raditz Freeman were re-interviewed, and they separately admitted that Jason had been at the ranch on September 15th. They basically said that Jason had gotten into it with Raditz Freeman, Merritt had intervened and stopped the fight, and then Jason had driven off in a silver car that they followed off of the property to make sure that he left. And then, like normal people, they just towed Jason's car to Montana.
Totally normal.
Yeah, thing to do. Like you do. But they would not give permission to search the property. On October 2nd, 2020, so that's sometime later.
Yeah.
Police showed up to search regardless because turns out none of the residents own the property. They were all squatting. Huh. And the police were able to talk to the owner of the property to allow the search. I guess she had just barely become aware that there were even squatters there. She had no idea.
Oh, yeah.
Because she was in the middle of a divorce and
yeah.
a little preoccupied with other stuff.
Yeah.
I have to say, I've been following the page that Pepper runs for Jason since a little after his initial disappearance. And she was openly begging to be allowed to search there.
Huh.
And they, refused. She would went and tried to talk to them in person.
Yeah.
Flat out laughed her off. There was enough as evidence that it seems like a reasonable judge should have been able to approve a search warrant.
Yeah.
Pretty much from the get-go, the last text he sent. Yeah. And then his phone still being there.
Yeah. You'd think that would have come through. I mean, who knows? Maybe it's just a very prudent judge in that place, but we've seen
maybe
so many cases out there of people being able to get no knock warrants within, 6 hours of getting a tip on something and having all of that information be wrong. So
it just seems to me, I don't know.
Yep.
I'm not going to act like the police going to the landlord was excellent police work, because it wasn't. That's unmotivated at best. You should have done that originally. What? Why are you? I don't know.
I feel like they are definitely going through all the proper motions, but it doesn't seem like there's much giddy up in this investigation at this point.
And I'm not, I don't know. I know I don't have all the information. I know that I am armchair quarterbacking here, but that seems like a long time to take some pretty basic A to B steps.
Yeah.
Anyway. So pretty much as soon as they are on the property, there's suspicion.
Yeah.
Because along one of the paths on the property was a prescription bottle for Jason Michael Fox. And then further down that path was a pair of smashed out sunglasses. And then at the end of that path were two boats. And there were two pads underneath them. One of them was just a cement pad, but the other one was a fresh gravel pad. And then around it were fresh tire marks in the earth and disturbed earth.
Yeah.
They returned on October 4th to excavate the boat pads with a backhoe.
Okay.
And surprising to literally no one, Jason's body was recovered from that earth. I'm going to go over a description of injuries. So trigger warning.
Yeah.
Jason was discovered 3 to 4 feet underground with his wrists bound behind his back. His cause of death was determined to be blunt force trauma. The extent of his injuries was such that he was not able to be identified visually. His family was not permitted to see his remains to say goodbye. And while there at first had been some suspicion that he may not have been dead when buried, the medical examiner did say that he was dead when he was buried, but that he had been beaten while tied to a chair. They described it as tortured,
mm-hmm.
which is, that's one of,
Mm-hmm.
On November 7th, police re-interviewed Hillstead, Raddatz, Freeman, Merritt, and Belding. Hillstead showed up at the station for his interview wearing pepper spray, a ballistic vest, his own set of cuffs on his belt, a set of knives, an AR-15, and a handgun. So super chill.
Yeah. That's definitely a choice to cosplay.
I've never heard of anybody being more scared in their life.
Well, it is. Yeah, no, I'm just going to say already there's a lot to unpack where I think anyone's legal or like their legal counsel would tell them it's a very bad idea.
Yeah, to probably show up don't show up
that way
in that.
For a,
get up
an interview.
Well, also like
for murder.
Good luck to any person of color showing up to a police interview dressed the same. That's not happening.
No. Yeah. Mm. There's a lot of choices there.
Yeah. Since Hillstead is not a person of color, they continued with the interview. And yeah. Hillstead told them that he had seen Merritt hitting Jason. But then he said he left the area because it wasn't his fight. Then he said that everybody else had stayed in the shop where the beating had happened. Fun little aside, he also told them that he should have killed the owners of the ranch when he had a chance. Because they had, like, the owner had just showed up and had her, like, lawyer with her because they were going over the property.
All the people.
And they knocked on the door and were like, who the hell are you? Mm-hmm. So, yes, that's what he was alluding to. He had answered the door with guns again.
Very stable person.
Yes. But Merritt told police that he had seen Hillstead and Raddatz Freeman hit Jason and that he had tried to intervene but had been threatened with a gun. Then he said that Hillstead had taken Jason outside and then came back in a little while later to tell them that Jason was dead. You're never going to guess what Raddatz Freeman's description of events was.
He was a totally innocent bystander that tried to stop things.
He said that it was Hillstead and Merritt had done it all, and he and Belding didn't participate. He specifically said that Belding had just sat in a chair, like he was just sitting in a chair and didn't do anything. But then he said that he had seen Merritt walk Jason out of the garage, and then later he had seen Jason in the back of Merritt's side-by-side, which is like... Does everybody know what a side-by-side is, or is that just us?
I mean...
We're farm people, guys.
Well, no, I think that they're very common if you're in rural communities.
It's kind of like a dune buggy, almost.
Yeah, it's...
But they use it for, like, zipping around the farm to do chores.
Yeah.
Or they used to. Now people use them for funsies.
It's bigger than a four-wheeler, smaller than a car, has all the power of a light truck. But with a small frame and a roll cage. Like if a Jeep
had a preemie baby.
Yeah.
That's what it is.
The bane of our existence out here. Because people let their, like, 12-year-old kids drive them around, even though they're not a legal on-highway vehicle.
Yep.
And their kids aren't licensed to drive them. And a lot of cities in this state are making them illegal to drive on city roads. So,
in this situation, so, like... I get why they would have one out there. I don't understand how they had one. I mean, I guess they legitimately just brought all their stuff and moved in.
Oh, yeah. They just...
Like, fully moved in.
Who knows? That side-by-side might have been there for...
The caretaker or whatever.
The venue. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And they were able to get the keys for it and just commandeered it as their own vehicle.
The stunning conflict of all of their stories. Raddatz Freeman's girlfriend also told police... That in the middle of the night on September 15th, she had woken up because she heard a skid steer being unloaded from a trailer and then operated around where Jason had been recovered for about 30 minutes. And then 30 minutes after that, Raddatz Freeman and Hillstead had left in two vehicles and driven to Montana. Yeah.
Yeah.
Hillstead did admit to operating the skid steer that night. And he did admit to driving Jason's car to Montana, but he insisted that he had no part in Jason's murder or in the concealment of his body, which doesn't make sense because if you drove the skid steer,
Yeah, and his vehicle afterwards. You have successfully participated in the cover up of murder.
Yeah, that logic for him just doesn't work, buddy. Bummer for him. The other three that they were interviewing eventually broke down and admitted that Hillstead had been kind of the instigator that night. On November 9th, 2020, 5 arrests were made. Riley Hillstead was arrested for 9 counts connected to Jason, including first-degree murder and first-degree kidnapping. Kevin Belding and Claude Merritt were charged with first-degree murder, first-degree kidnapping, and making false or misleading statements. Matthew Raddatz Freeman was charged with first-degree murder, first-degree kidnapping, second-degree taking a vehicle without permission, tampering with physical evidence, and false or misleading statements. And someone named Sean Bella was arrested for providing false or misleading statements. So that's 5 people in total.
Yeah.
I'm going to back up a little bit again here and kind of explain in more detail how these people are all connected, what they think happened, and what's happened since these arrests.
Okay.
So Jason had made friends with Matthew Raddatz Freeman and his girlfriend when he first began couch surfing. They had moved in together briefly, but after a short time, Raddatz Freeman and his girlfriend had moved out of the shared house and then into Riley Hillstead's squatter house. So then Jason had gone back to couch surfing.
Yeah.
I couldn't find exactly what went sour, but whatever it was, it happened pretty quickly. Because in June of 2020, which he started couch surfing in 2020.
Yeah.
Raddatz Freeman had come after Jason's car with a pipe, like swung it at the car.
Yeah.
And pretty much held him up for his lunch money because he threatened Jason into giving his girlfriend money. Mm. Jason filed a police report and I didn't see that anything came of that. In July, Hillstead and Raddatz Freeman attacked Jason while in his car again, breaking out his windshield with a pipe because their license plate had gone missing and they felt that it was Jason's fault. During this argument, Hillstead had brandished an assault rifle at Jason. He pointed it at him and talked about how he was going to murder Jason. Again, a police report was made at the time. No, it doesn't look like any action was taken. I don't think there was.
Huh.
Mm-hmm. I couldn't quite connect how Merritt and Bella knew everyone else. There were some personal photos on Jason's Google account of Merritt. So obviously there's some connection there.
Yeah.
But I'm not sure how they all knew. I mean, it's a small enough town that I'm sure everybody at some point knew everybody else.
Yeah.
And I don't know if they had been present during the earlier incidents, but I did see that on September 24th, 2020, so that's shortly after Jason was murdered, but before he had been recovered.
Yeah.
Bella sent a Facebook message to Riley Hillstead that said, "You need to explain what happened and be a better man, dude. You can't just hide what you did to that 19-year-old kid." From what I could find, he was a witness of what happened, but kept his mouth shut. Since that time, there have been some trials, and some have received sentences. In December of 2021, Kevin Belding's attorneys successfully argued to reduce his charges because they claimed that he did not actively participate in murdering Jason or hiding his body. They did admit that he knew Jason was murdered while he was present on the property that night. He did not try to stop it, and he lied to police to misdirect them about it. But that amounted to a lesser charge of rendering criminal assistance and failure to notify a coroner, which meant he had been waiting for trial for 15 months,
mm-hmm.
and the maximum punishment is, like, the maximum sentence is 12 months.
So he got time served. And,
he's a free man.
Yeah.
At the trial, Michael Fox said, "The criminal aid that this morally bankrupt person delivered resulted in my son being brutally beaten to death and left to rot in a shallow grave for 3 weeks." For me, that's...
Yeah.
If you offer criminal aid that results in death...
Yeah.
It's not just, like, criminal aid. That's a life. That is mind-boggling.
I'm surprised because I know in a lot of states that if criminal aid results in the concealment of certain level of felonies or in someone committing a certain level of felony, like you didn't report that someone said that they were going to do something
and then they
and
did
then
it.
They did it.
Mm-hmm.
Then you are a co-conspirator 100% through and through on that. Some states have that, some states don't. But it seems odd to me that the fact that Idaho allows someone to
this conceal, one was in Washington.
Oh, it's in Washington. Mm-hmm.
It's right on that border.
Yeah, conceal a felony murder.
Yeah, that's
and not be considered a co-conspirator inside that case.
What?
Because essentially it allows if they can't prove one person did it, every single person could say they only helped in hiding it.
That's exactly what they were trying to do.
And that circular logic gets everyone off.
Yep.
And that's heinous.
That's exactly what their intention was, and that's like when they were doing the interviews, they said that it was Hillestad that had come up with that plan of everybody say it was the other person, basically.
Yeah.
So Claude Merritt was found guilty of his role in Jason's kidnapping and murder. And on February 18th, 2022, so just recently, a judge sentenced him to 28 years in prison. Jason's family asked that the highest possible sentence be given, and given the chance to say something to Jason's family, Merritt stood up and angrily told everyone that they should consider how he feels. So,
I mean, has anyone considered how he might be hurt by his own actions?
Well, he said how he was like, well, what do you think it feels like to see that and then have a gun pointed in your face and told that you need to shut up? Which I might buy if it weren't for everything else in this whole case.
I can imagine.
He invited him out there. He lied about having seen him. He lied about having invited him out there. That's not I saw something happen and I'm scared to say something.
Yeah.
Nope.
I mean, it goes away the second that you're communicating with these other people, helping conceal it.
Mm-hmm.
That's not that you were threatened and then you did not associate with them ever again.
And to take that time to stand up and throw a pity party for yourself when you have taken somebody's life. Stunning. I could not find any trial dates yet for Riley Hillestad, Matthew Raddatz Freeman, or Sean Bella. But I'm definitely going to watch for updates on those cases.
Okay.
And I know this seems like where I'm naturally going to draw to a close, but I'm not, because there's still a little bit more.
Okay.
Jason's family feels pretty strongly that he was the victim of a hate crime.
Yeah, I think that's... Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Jason was hyper aware of this threat. In his Google history, they found him looking up, like, where's the safest place to live for an LGBTQ person in the U.S.? He would look up rates of hate crimes near him when he would travel. He was very aware that he was other in that community. And Pepper felt pretty much from the beginning that this was what had happened, that he had been the victim of a hate crime. And Michael and Susan had kind of gone between trying to respect that law enforcement is telling them everything they need to know, but also realizing that there's still more to be uncovered.
Yeah.
In the most recent article that I could find with statements from both, they've all pretty much landed on the same opinion with the information that's becoming available. Pepper was able to access Jason's iCloud, and information there combined with things like statements written in his diary about his sexual assault, I think could result in additional charges eventually.
Yeah.
While Sheriff Blakeslee of the Pendere County Sheriff's Office, which, by the way, that is not spelled I heard it on a news clip because I thought I had figured out what it must be, and I was way off. But he has said many times that there's not enough evidence to suggest that this is a hate crime, but he also has declined to state whether or not there were slurs used during the incident. And I don't know, he's not been the most proactive. I don't think Jason has been a huge priority for them.
Yeah.
They even, like, he went out of his way to say that Jason's diary didn't provide enough detail about his assault to do anything with, but also that the assault would have happened outside his jurisdiction, which for me is like, that's irrelevant because he keeps saying that there's no clear motive.
Yeah.
He does say that they are considering that as a potential motive, but I don't. Yeah.
The problem with these statements to me from the sheriff is that none of this has anything to do with him. He should investigate it because he heard that there is a crime. Mm-hmm. If it's out of his jurisdiction, he hands it off to the jurisdiction it is in, mm-hmm. and cooperates and helps them. And the charges are brought by the district attorney. He has nothing to do with that and should have no opinion on that. He is simply there to do the investigation and processing and
I will follow
through with any arrests that need to happen.
There's a pretty high rate of missing persons. Like, it seems to have gone up.
Yeah.
The unsolved missing persons cases have seemed to have gone up recently in that area. It's a very small town.
Yeah.
There's only so many people to go missing. Even one person missing is high for that population. And there's a lot of missing people in that area.
Yeah.
It's also clear that the problem doesn't end with the five men that were charged.
Yeah.
There were women who were at the property that night. Again, I'm not going to name them because they haven't been brought up on charges. But I think there's a chance they could. One has documented interaction with Jason, threatening him and calling him slurs. At a car procession last year in honor of Jason, the participants of the processions said that one of the suspected murderers came out of his house and brandished an AR-15 at people in their cars, as well as at Jason's mom. Big shocker.
Yeah.
I could not find any news articles about that, but yeah. It's unsurprising.
Yeah.
What it comes down to is it's uncomfortable to call out your own community, especially because it's a small community. If you're the first one to call it out, you are alone.
Yeah.
The problem is also that if nobody will take that, you know, those first steps,
yeah.
if nobody with a platform is willing to be vulnerable in that way, then you're just going to continue having a town filled with cowards.
Yeah, I mean, it's the complacency is itself violence.
Mm-hmm.
Allowing, not calling it out and not doing anything to better your environment just allows the violence to continue to anyone that's suffering in silence because they can't feel safe about calling it out either.
On October 16th, 2020, the memorial that Jason's family had created for him, it was at a park where Pepper had returned each night to light a candle for Jason. It was vandalized. Somebody had written, ha ha, and then a gay slur. And then under a portrait of Jason, they left a condom. There was just nobody in town seems to want to say much about it, which is interesting because they want to talk about it a lot, but I don't see the same outpouring from the community that most small towns give when they lose one of their own.
It's what makes it feel very much like a hate crime,
mm-hmm.
is that no one seems to be shocked.
And yet nobody wants the crime to
or the do continuation of crimes, mm-hmm. and they're not doing much to call it out or stop it, which makes it seem like it's expected.
They just want it to be quiet and go away.
Yeah. Yeah, that it definitely has hate crime vibes.
Jason's memory does continue to accomplish good, even if he isn't here to do so himself. Last year, one of Pepper's TikToks went viral, and on April 4th, 2021, to celebrate what would have been Jason's 20th birthday, Newport, Washington had its first pride parade in his honor. I will say, there was a pride parade in Newport in his honor. Hundreds of supporters showed up, and they walked over the state line to make it a two-state demonstration. It was really beautiful, mm-hmm. to see that many people show up for him. He also has a friend who at the Spokane Pride event made sure to have a moment for him. He's not forgotten.
Yeah.
Well, the TikTok attention has been an important way for Pepper to signal boost for Jason. It's also a really public way to experience grief.
Yeah.
And so I understand that that's probably difficult for different needs within the same family.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Michael does say that he's glad that people are angry about what happened to his son. He wants people to talk about Jason too. And while at times he hasn't been certain if his son's murder was indeed a hate crime, in 2021, he said that he felt there was enough to support that conclusion. He is uncomfortable with some of the ways Jason's story is changing online. Some TikTokers have claimed that Jason was dismembered, for example.
Yeah.
And understandingly, that bothers Michael.
Yeah, of course.
He told The Inlander that he didn't understand how sharing misinformation would help. It doesn't. It just further muddies the water.
Yeah. You see that a lot with when true crime cases go into viral social media posts. Mm-hmm. Oftentimes, because it's something that's being repeated, people escalate
telephone.
It in yeah. order to get more, like they're clout chasing.
But here's the thing. It's not a... What happened to him is horrendous.
Yeah.
He was...
No, you don't have to...
He was kicked to death.
Yeah.
Like, that's horrific.
Yeah.
And disgusting. You don't need to add more to it. Like, he's not a video game character. He's not a...
No.
He's not a story character. He's a person that experienced these things, and his family is still experiencing his loss.
Yeah.
So it's just very important that we try to be as correct as possible. I'm sure that some of this is not exactly correct, because I'm learning more and more, even within reputable sources.
Yeah.
Some of this was like the skid steer, for example.
Uh-huh.
In some sources, they mixed it up and put a different person yeah. as being the driver. In some of these cases, they don't mention who sent the text to Hillbrand saying that he needed to come forward.
Yeah.
And so there, for most of this, you have no idea why Sean Bella was even involved.
Yeah.
Because you don't know that he was there.
Yeah. It's
very difficult to try and sort through a lot of this information. So I understand how easy it is to accidentally repeat the wrong thing. I've done it.
Yeah.
But I just think that we have to be open to double checking ourselves and correcting ourselves when we're wrong.
I think for anyone discussing cases like this,
mm-hmm.
everyone's going to have a hard time keeping everything 100% factual all the time and getting all the facts right. We struggle very hard with that. I'm probably the worst out of anyone to do that.
No.
It's hard for me to keep everything 100, but you don't have to embellish. Getting a fact wrong because you said the wrong name or... You know, slight details were just like,
or you're
trying to be as accurate as possible.
Quoted but, an article that didn't yeah, have the right information.
That's fine, but it's not embellishment. Embellishing, amplifying stuff to the point where it's more horrifying. One, you're re-tormenting the family mm-hmm. because they have to go and correct all of this misinformation. Mm-hmm. And it's horrific misinformation that takes a bad situation, makes it even worse.
Mm-hmm.
But also... I mean, the motivation behind that is, it bothers me so much. I really struggle with hearing people embellish things that are already horrific. You don't need to make them more horrific.
It doesn't make it more fantastic. Enough. It's not something that you need to add your twist to.
Yeah.
Ultimately, Jason's mom, Pepper, talks about opening a safe house for the LGBTQIA community in Newport someday, in Jason's name. She talks about how her love for him is all that she has left of him and how he cared about everyone, even the people who weren't kind to him. He wanted to be a nurse. He wrote a paper in, like, when he was doing his last couple credits to make up for, you know, your senior sluffies.
Yeah.
he... wrote a paper about how he wanted to be a nurse because he loved caring for other people. Jason's dad, Michael, said at one hearing that he could never accept the empty seat at their table and that he didn't know how to move forward from that. His mom, Susan, said that the thing that has helped most for them is knowing that these assholes have been arrested.
Yeah.
For his brother, Robbie, he keeps a bag of Jason's clothes next to a hope chest full of Jason's belongings. When the empty spot on the couch next to him feels extra empty, he'll put some of Jason's things there. He said that sometimes it helps to just fall asleep there next to Jason's things. For our cause of the week, in honor of a compassionate, magnetic person like Jason, we are donating to the Pride Foundation. From their website, Pride Foundation is building a better, safer, and more equitable world for LGBTQ+ people and our families in the Northwest. Our work is guided by the fundamental belief that every person should be able to live safely, openly, and genuinely in all the communities that we call home. If you would like to donate in Jason's name, you can do so at pridefoundation.org.
That's really, yeah.
It's one that I think it does benefit from increased attention.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know that they would have ever searched the property or made any arrests if it weren't for his family keeping people accountable. And I'm so stunned at how much love his family has for him to dedicate so much to him. So I'm honored to tell his story. I'm sad that this was the story that had to be told.
Yeah.
This was a rough one for me.
Yeah, that's a rough one. I think that the fact that there's still cases like this,
mm-hmm.
where you often think that we've progressed so far in this world, that mm-hmm. people being able to live authentically as themselves and they're not harming anyone else, just being themselves.
Mm-hmm.
And yet that's an affront to other people to the point where they will kill someone for it is really, really tough. It's.
I do think that there is. I think that it's a nuanced picture.
Yeah.
I do think drug use was a contributing factor. I do think that the main contributing factor was Hillstead's homophobia.
Mm-hmm.
And obviously, because they aren't tacking that charge on, I can't. This is just opinions that just I'm spewing. Yep, yeah. I'm speculating here. But I think it's just a perfectly awful combination of ignorance and self-hatred and homophobia.
Yeah.
I think this story needs told. I think it needs told the way it is.
Yeah.
And I hope that everybody donates in his name. I think that sharing good in his honor is like the best way to Absolutely. Keep him here. Yeah. It seems like that's what he would have wanted to do with his life. I don't have a palate cleanser story of our kids like usual.
Me neither.
And you know what? I think that's okay this week.
Yeah. I think while it does help to go out on a lighter note, sometimes just leaving it where it is just fine.
Yeah. Do you want to help us with our socials, though?
Yeah. If you'd like to find us and follow us, you can do that on Twitter at This Is Awful Pod, on Instagram at This Is Awful Podcast. You can find us on Facebook in our discussion group at, if you search, This Is Awful, a true crime discussion group. You can buy things that Allison has designed and on all sorts of products. If you go over to our Spreadshirt shop at shop.spreadshirt.com/this-is-awful-podcast or hit the link in our show notes. That's probably the better way to do it.
Mm-hmm.
And if you'd like to help us donate to our causes of the week, you can become a Patreon at patreon.com/this-is-awful-pod.
Mm-hmm.
All the money that comes into our Patreon goes right back out into our causes of the week or helping us keep this podcast hosted and on the air. Same with any money that comes in from our Spreadshirt shop that essentially just pays for the actual real costs of a podcast. We don't plan to make a profit from this podcast ever. It's not our goal. We don't want to profit off of victims. So you can, you know, feel good about anything that you're doing here is not enriching us. It's going to go right back into the world as good.
I will also say, I forgot to clarify with that Facebook page.
Yeah.
The Facebook page that I referenced earlier in the episode was Justice for Jason Michael Fox. That's the page run by Pepper. She also has a TikTok. It's been removed a couple of times. Mm-hmm. So she has, I think right now it's Pepper Fox 3. But you can find that through the Facebook page as well. Okay. It does have a lot of information on there. Please remember to be measured and respectful if you go and follow that. So,
yeah.
Yeah. That's all I got to say.
Well,
remember who you are and what you stand for.
And don't die.
Love you guys. Be good.